How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. 710 here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Glad you're along. Hopefully you had a pretty decent week if you are kind of into weeks. If everything's just sort of blurring itself together and weeks become weekdays, become weekend days, becomes it's just one day that I just cross off to get to the next one, well, you're a lot of people in the same boat as you. Today's the day, and I don't know what people's feelings on this. So Doug Ford apparently is going to announce at some point this morning, as he said, this will be a stark number of projections of people, are Ontarians, that are going to get sick. And that may die from the COVID-19 virus. You want to hear those numbers? Because the Prime Minister has said he's not prepared at this point to say what they're going to be as far as Canada goes.
I have no issue with that. I watch the updates in New York City. I think Cuomo is being as transparent. When you watch the White House, it's more fictitious, I think, for people. And I'll say this, I guess, mass population in Toronto and even just a little change in the weather, I don't believe it's any type of scare tactic. Do I think the timing of it is to just give people a realization that, hey, don't think because we've done this for a couple of weeks here that we're, you know, cooled and clear and there's light at the end of the tunnel. So, no, I have no issue with it whatsoever.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it, to be quite honest with you. I mean, the way he talked yesterday, it's like it's going to be this number that will be mind-blowing. And
I guess
we'll find out sooner rather than later. It's interesting in that from a federal level, they're going one way. And here in Ontario, we're going completely in the other direction. And whether that will increase the pressure on the feds to then put out the, you know, the cross-Canada projections, because that's all they are
at this point.
As you said, maybe they're being put out there because they want people to realize that this is not going to be a short-term thing. This is going to be a long-term thing that you're going to have to, you know, you're committed to doing the right things right now. You're going to have to stay committed as tough as it is for a long, long time to get through this.
Well, it's the reason why we're part of a democracy. I don't want what's happening in China. But I think you also have to realize, and you mentioned what the GTA or whatever they call it down there is about 8 million people?
I think so.
And we're going a population of 38 million. What they're dealing with, and that's part of what New York City is right now. You're talking about a GTA or a metro area of 20 million. How that's handled by Ontario, and that's not only the engine of Ontario, but a big part of the entire economy in Canada, that has to be, I think, looked at a little bit differently. Not to be naive, because we're only a million people here, but I do look at it a little bit differently, just the same way as I look at New York City versus some of the rural areas in the United States.
Dr. Abdu Sharkawi has been he's the infectious diseases doctor who's been on the front lines, but also has been a guest on all the CTV news coverage of this. He's absolutely fantastic. He's really good. He just tweeted out 13 minutes ago. He says, if you're waiting for modeling or projections to guide your behavior, you've missed the boat. Neither panic nor complacency should fill their quotas. Be patient and be vigilant. No matter what, period. That's what he wrote about this. So.
Yeah, and all the models are done on assumption. And that is the difficulty, I think, for any of us. We haven't seen this. I guess we get a lot of data out of Italy, China we don't because they're lying, but to other countries and for people. I just want to try to be as informed as I possibly can. And I think we've all been as responsible as we can. We're thankful we get to come into work every day, talk a little bit about sports. But I'd like to have as much accurate information and certainly feel like the Canadian government can give that to us.
Now, on the positive side of things, how about this thing that went on with the Ottawa Food Bank the last couple of days? So it started with the CEO of Shopify, Mr. Finkelstein, who put out a tweet, I think it was on Wednesday, as late as Wednesday, saying, hey, listen, for everybody that retweets my tweet, I'll donate $1 up to $10,000 to the Ottawa Food Bank. Well, that just kind of, as a lot of things in social media do, caught fire. Got retweeted very quickly to the point it was right up to the 10,000. Well, then it got everybody talking, and then we had the Wu-Tang Clan weigh in as well. Apparently, they're making donations to many food banks across North America. How about in the last, day and a half to 2 days, the Ottawa Food Bank getting $170,000 in donations, which
incredible.
Is absolutely fantastic. And as we know, and they said many times, they turn $1 into $5 in terms of their buying power, right? We're talking about, and again, there's a lot more people depending on the food bank. A lot of people have lost their jobs, be it, full-time or temporarily or whatever, that are having to rely on social services like the food bank. So the fact that they have a direct infusion of cash, that is a really, really great piece of news in the midst of what has been quite frankly, a lot of miserable news we've been dealing with the last 3 weeks. It's stories like that that kind of keep you going.
It really is. And also, then you get into the distribution. I know one of the things that first came up, and this was more in the United States, but it certainly relates to here and relates to the area that I live in. When they started talking, I think in the Mass area, about, God, you got to shut down the schools and you're worrying about it, one of the things that was brought up were the meal programs. And for a lot of kids, and I know in my area, the Boys and Girls Club is incredible as far as their before school, after school programs that for a lot of kids and a lot of families really count on those things. So that's the daily activity. It's the distribution. And typical to Ottawa, we'll rally and we'll help. But no, these things are, this was, and in my area, I think was the most used in the entire province. And that was before any of this hit. So much needed and much love for that.
All right. 7:15, got a tweet here from Kyle, who works at the grocery. You're talking about that you bypassed the 50% off sushi.
Yeah.
Yesterday when you stopped at Loblaws. Kyle even took a picture and sent it along on social media, tweeted at you, Simmer, and said, no 50% off deals on sushi today at Loblaws.
So, and that actually is my Loblaws.
Yeah. So you're good to go.
Well, yeah.
They just took the 50% off sticker off is what they did. Now it's just back to full price.
I guess there's just, and isn't that funny how it kind of relates to, and I think we're so fortunate when you go into the store, there's so many fresh goods. You look at, and I can say, at least in mine, there's been no changeover in fruits and vegetables, a little less in the meat department. But overall, the store looks very similar to it did a couple of months ago. There's just certain items for whatever reason. And I guess I put the Loblaws, no disrespect to Loblaws sushi. I just feel like that's not an item that I want to be bringing home right now.
Yes.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me.
I went with the, as I did the shopping yesterday, I went with the 50% off steak kebabs that were there. And I said, it says, I think it's, you know, they always label it like, have it tonight. And I looked at it and said, I'm going to have that tonight, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And I like that because I haven't made a steak in a long time. We've been if we have meat, it's either it's chicken or ground beef in something, right?
Okay.
So it was nice to have steak for the first time in a while.
Well,
so.
And did you peel the 50% off before you got home presented to the
family? No, you know what? I did such a good job.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to pat myself on the back. I'm going to pat myself on the back for the
second
great
time.
Grocery store run that I did yesterday. I got every single thing I needed to get.
Olympic sport here.
Yeah.
Hourly updates.
But the fact that I ticked off every single one without even having to ask for help once, and I scored a little bit of a bargain. And by the way, it got some primo kudos after it was made and eaten last night. It was like, hey, that was a good call.
Uh-huh.
And I said, hey, leave it to the big man. Takes care of you.
Leave it to the big man. Call me Big Pappy.
Daddy's home.
Gotcha.
Daddy's home.
He's got the 50% off food, everybody.
He's got the gold chains as well.
50%. Yeah. Did anybody help you out, unpack it and get it into the fridge and onto the shelves?
You know what?
A little help here from the
fam. No, but you've worked with me for a long time, right, Hammer?
Yeah.
And you know that I can be a little bit particular about things, okay?
What?
So I like to stack the dishwasher because no one in my family cares about how the dishes are put in the dishwasher. And with the fridge being somewhat stocked right now, the freezer, we've got kind of one of those typical, you know, where the bottom half of it is the freezer part and then the top half is the double doors. And there's a fair bit of food in there. Well, it needs to be packed correctly.
Yeah.
And my wife with her broken ankle is standing there directing things. Okay.
Directing traffic.
Because she can't move around.
She's
and then
the
I've
foreman.
Got my early 20s daughter who's willing to help. But it's just, there's no, like, they can't conceptualize how things are going to fit in the freezer.
Man.
So I just said,
move out of the way.
Step aside. Let the big man pack the freezer section. And I tell you what, there is no bigger feeling of accomplishment than thinking there's no way I'm getting that all in. And I got it all in and then closing that door smoothly like butter. I said, way to go, big man. You did it again.
They are never going to learn if you don't give them the opportunity
I can't do it.
To grow.
I'm a control freak.
You've got to kick the little birdie out of the nest.
Certain things, I'm with you on that. My kid's got to learn a lot of things, but packing the freezer section of the fridge and stacking the dishwasher are things you're going to have to learn when you move out and do your own thing.
Yeah,
the big man's in control.
Well, then you pop it over in a nice cold one. And the worst part is if they're not helping is when they're already into the groceries and they start eating and opening stuff. then you're asking.
I want to taste these. And
I can also see the wife with the crutches maybe giving you a little nudge.
Is she
doing any pointing with the crutches
themselves?
Yes.
Maybe the odd look into the back of the knee with the involuntary bend.
Physical harassment with the crutches.
That's the way it works.
That's beautiful.
All right, 7:19. We had a wrench throwing on this wrench throwing Friday last hour. to Harold Reynolds. It was a wrench from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And we all, including probably the good listeners, all had a foggy memory of him dissing Canadians somehow.
I know it was a home game. I remember it was a home broadcast. That's the only recollection I have.
So we've sourced, Hammer was sourced the clip during the break that we had right there. So we're going to take you back. This is 2015 playoffs, Blue Jays playoffs, right? Who are they playing? Do you know?
I do not know who they're playing.
Right, Texas or Kansas City?
Yeah, one or the other. So here is that comment, which apparently spurred our listener to want to throw a wrench at Harold Reynolds from 5 years ago.
Tom, we were talking about foul balls in the stands up in Toronto. And because there's not a lot of people that grew up playing baseball in Canada, they're not used to catching a lot of balls in the stands.
So there you go. A lot of people in Canada didn't grow up playing baseball, so they're not used to catching balls that come into the stands.
Yeah.
Harold Reynolds, 2015.
Yeah, and we're very temperamental when it comes to that kind of stuff and that behavior, and especially coming from Americans, we want nothing but praise. So yeah, he realized at that point that's not the path to go down, especially for a guy living in Seattle that very close to Vancouver.
Because every foul ball that's hit in an American ballpark gets caught. One handies. Hey, look what I got here. Show it off. No, nobody's getting hit in the face.
No, not at all.
Foul balls.
All right, 7:21. Hope you enjoyed our best 10 of the last 10. Last night it was the game the Hamburglar, Andrew Hammond said, really kind of got him thinking that, hey, we got something going on here. It was a Sens win in Winnipeg. On the second of a back-to-back night when he himself didn't think he was going to have to play, and then Craig Anderson, who was coming back from injury, wasn't able to go. So Hammond went in, had a terrible warm-up, and then described what was he said yesterday when he joined us, Simmer, that he took a Red Bull.
Yeah, fired her down after a conversation with Kyle Turris.
Yeah, after the warm-up, and then went out there and stood on his head, and the Sens won that game last night that we aired for you 3-1. Tonight we're going to take you to, I think, if my memories of the Hamburglar run, this is the game that stands out to me. I know for some it's the Flyer game, and that's the game, the final game in which they officially clinched a playoff spot with a win. That's the game we're going to play Monday night. Tonight we're going to have the Ottawa-Pittsburgh game, which was the last home game of the season. It was a game they got down 3-0. Was it an elimination game if they lost? Do you remember that was the case?
It was game three, and they lost in five games?
No. No, it's regular season we're talking.
Oh, okay. No, I have no idea.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Mark. So actually, when you mentioned that, I was thinking of the Daniel Alfredson, the probably not. I don't think it was an elimination, but it was just a feeling of they had to continue to track to, well, against Philadelphia. They had to win that game, and they got in by 1 point. But I don't think it was elimination.
Okay. Regardless, it was a big game. And if they didn't have to win, it certainly went a long way toward them continuing to stay alive in this improbable run to a playoff spot. So, down 3-0, rallied to tie it at 3, and we'll take it overtime.
Back along the boards. It's tipped ahead by Mathot. Couturis at the line. Drops it there. Carlson, backside play. Stone scores! Stone buries it! 4-3 win! The Senators live again! Another day to dream!
There you go, Dean Brown with that great call of the game winner by Mark Stone in that game, that final home game of the 2015 Hamburglar run. And after that, just two games left. They beat the Rangers the next game and then beat the Flyers in that 82nd and final game of the season to make the playoffs. But that marks when Andrew Hammond joined us yesterday, he said when the puck went on Mark, and he's standing in the net at the other end, he said when the puck went on Mark Stone's stick, he said, I knew it was going in. Yeah, well, that was just the role that the team was on, but that he was on in particular.
Well, and the way he was shooting the puck, the leg up, he had that little bit of an adjustment in the snap. And I can remember that game, we were having a lot of fun because we had the listener party, had all the Penguins fans in the box, and all of a sudden the Sens are down. And it felt like, hey, this has been an incredible run, now it's over, and it built up. And I remember I went to the far side at the old Gallings box with Eric and Dale Hill and the crew, and I had an angle to it, and it was quite interesting because the angle to it, as soon as the puck was on his stick, you could just see that little opening, and sure enough, he ended up scoring, and just the energy in the building, and I guess it almost felt like continuing along, just playing with house money, right? But you didn't want it to end, and you certainly didn't want it to end where they didn't end up making the playoffs, and that was a huge goal.
It was. So we'll have that game for you tonight from famine to feast, down big early to a Pittsburgh and the incredible rally and the overtime winner. So it is a game number 80 from the 2015 season. Sens and Pens for you. Tonight, 6 o'clock. I know a lot of people are really kind of enjoying in this time with no games. And even though they're games and from, in this case, what, 5 years ago in games that you know the result. There's just, I think Chris Stevenson tweeted out last night, it's like comfort food listening to hockey play-by-play on the radio.
Yeah.
So we'll continue these games for you tonight and then have four more games next week. That'll wrap up the top 10 from the last 10. And then after that, because we're not going to have the live games for a while, we're going to go back to, and this is where I'm going to ask for the listeners' help, and you guys can weigh in as well. We're going to revisit the 2017 playoff run in its entirety, or in its half entirety. And here's what I'm talking about. Of course, the Sens in 2017 won 11 playoff games, right? They won the series against Boston. They won the series against the Rangers. There's eight, and then, of course, won three and lost Game 7 against Pittsburgh. So would you want to hear all the games from the playoff run, including the games they lost? Or would you just want to hear the wins and maybe the Game 7 double overtime loss to Pittsburgh? You want to hear all the games or you just want to hear the wins? So, Simmer, where would you come down on that? By the way, I should tell you, for those that don't remember, there was one terrible game against Pittsburgh, Game 5, I believe it was, in which they lost 7-0.
Yeah.
That would be a game I probably wouldn't play. Every other game they lost, and they lost, what, two games to Boston, two games to New York, two games, and then the other two games to Pittsburgh other than Game 7. Yeah. Those were all really close games, one-goal games. A couple of Ranger games, I think, were 3-1 or 4-1, something. You know, there weren't a lot of blowouts. So you want to listen to all the games, or would you just want to listen to the wins?
You know what? I would listen to the wins, but obviously my approach is a little different. I mean, I think fans have such a feel for this. I love the home games. I love the wins. Love the energy of Dean and Gord when you're kind of going through it. I'm trying to kind of recall, because what's also part of this, and I guess would be fun, and it's been a lead-up as we've had players on in the different shows, each story or each game in the playoffs always has a different storyline, right? So I don't remember all the Ranger games other than the Chris Neal storyline of whether he should be in the lineup. He hops back in. I think, too, when did they chase Fleury? Was it Game 3 and then Murray came in for Game 4?
Correct. You came in Game 3, I think.
In Game 3 and then Sullivan said Game 4. That was really a feeling of the series changing, right?
Because
there was still the feeling by, I remember we had one of the Pittsburgh reporters on, myself and Ian are out doing the show, and they said, listen, Fleury's brought them this far, this is his, after one loss, there's no way they're going to switch it up. Well, Mike Sullivan made a hell of a move, and I remember when Murray went in, because he obviously presents himself different athletically, I thought, my oh my, this guy looks so big in the net after Fleury was in there. He locked it down and the rest is history. So that would be more my question is, of course the wins, of course the home games in particular, but are there some other storylines of games that you could kind of lead into that you listen to? And like I said, Chris Neal certainly one of them. And that was a part of that run, was from Craig Anderson and his wife Nicole to Bobby Ryan scoring some incredible goals. Nothing lucky. Still remember him busting off of the left side, showing some speed. Clark MacArthur back into the lineup. Like each story in each game, I think, presented itself something differently.
Yeah.
So to sum it up, I'm going wins.
there an answer in there
somewhere? Well, no, but there might be some other games. But again, I like it, but I'm not a fan. And fans have such a different gut feeling for what they'd want to hear than I would. That's all
right. All. Maybe, Hammer, you're the best person to put the question to.
Just win, baby. Yeah? I just want to hear the wins. Yeah? I get Simmer's point of some storylines, some of the losses, and how series can change from that because of lineup changes after losses. But as a fan, just give me those wins, baby.
So if you go back to Game 1 of the Boston series, right? That was a game they lost 2-1. Brad Marchand had the winner. It was in the last minute or the last couple of minutes, right? Crazy goal. Like, what was that game like? It was a 2-1 game at the end of the day, right? And then they bounce back and win the second one on the Dion Phaneuf overtime winner, right?
Yeah, I remember from Game 1 of that series was it was a bit of a feeler-outer game. There wasn't a whole lot to it. In terms of creativity, it was two teams trying to figure out how they were going to play each other, very strategic.
And then
Brad Marchand just coming up huge.
You also, and again, part of the storyline of that series, though, is I can remember Craig Anderson being called out or being pissed off at the media, right, for kind of being critical of his game. And I remember they went back to Boston, and that was when his wife showed up to a game. And I believe he came into the crowd after the game. Was that maybe the clinching game? But that was a storyline as well, because I just remember him being like, this guy, he was pretty ornery with the media, and he was pretty pissed off, and he was going to show anybody, and I think it would have been the clinching game. He came out and played excellent.
So we'll throw a Twitter poll out there of and listen, I'll be quite honest with you, you know, as someone who wants to put some programming out there that people want to listen to, if we start eliminating the games that they lost, even though they might create great storylines leading into to the next night, I mean, we're eliminating, 12 nights worth of games, right?
Sure.
Or not 12, I guess it would be 4 to 8.
Yeah.
8 games, right? So anyway, we'll throw that out there as a Twitter poll. I won't hold anybody to it. Just like to get people's thoughts, especially fans' thoughts on what are you interested in the whole run? Or are you just interested in the wins and maybe the Game 7 double overtime loss to Pittsburgh? So let us know what you think. We'll tweet that out at TSN 1200. If you follow us on Twitter, we'll take a quick Twitter poll. Maybe put it out there, hammer for, an hour, something like that. All right? Okay, we'll take a break, 7:30. When we come back, we'll get to some of the news of the day. From yesterday, from the various different sports. I see now that the Open Championship very much in question, the British Open, mid-July as to whether it's going to get played or not. But the PGA Tour is powering through. Apparently, as we speak, they're set to release a revised schedule of events to begin at some point in the latter half of 2020. Of course, no one knows exactly when golf might resume, but let's talk a little bit about that. We'll get into some ideas as far as football is concerned, including a signing this morning in the NFL of a fairly significant name with the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll look ahead to the OHL draft, which is tomorrow, by the way. Ottawa 67s hold the 20th and final pick of the first round. So we'll get into all that. Pierre McGuire, as we mentioned, after 8, and Doug Gilmore after 9 o'clock here for a Friday morning. Hope you're having a great start to it. You are listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back. 7:37 here on a Friday morning. JR Simmer and Hammer with you. Thanks for listening. Pierre McGuire will join us. Talk a little hockey with Pete coming up after 8 and after 9. Doug Gilmore, former Cornwall Royal from way back in the day in the early 1980s. Of course, went on to a long, long, legendary career with the St. Louis Blues, won a Stanley Cup with the Calgary Flames, went on an incredible one run with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the early 90s for a couple of years. Did he get high-sticked by Wayne Gretzky in the 93 playoffs? Did that cost the Leafs a chance to be in the finals against the Montreal Canadiens? Look forward to a chat with the man they call Killer coming up after 9.
Yeah, and picturing the old war room in Toronto, and there's old John Ferguson Jr., Mike Penny, Craig Button, Donnie Granato, Jeff Jackson, and Doug Gilmore was working with us during that. And I remember he'd come back from working with Canada, the Spangler Cup, and he said, "I see this player. He's playing in Russia right now. We got to get a hold of him." And at the time, I believe that was Mark Giordano, who had had a contract issue with Calgary. And it's funny how you just remember little things there. So worked with Killer for a little bit, and one hell of a guy. And you talk about a rock star. And between him and Wendell Clark and Daryl Sittler, who would be around the team and in the office all the time, reaction on the street when those guys walk around, something pretty cool. Along with the late, great Pat Quinn, it was just really neat to see the passion and excitement anytime we went out in the city with any of those guys.
Yeah, I was, as anybody who's listened to the show for any amount of time, I'm not a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, but I was living in Toronto in the early 90s when Gilmore was there. And of course, the Blue Jays were winning World Series, and the Leafs were playing great hockey, especially in the playoffs, with Doug Gilmore leading the way, arguably at that point, you know, maybe the best player in all of the NHL. And I will remember, and Bob Cole has had, there are some iconic calls from over the years of Stanley Cup overtime winning playoff goals. The goal where Gilmore, this was against St. Louis.
Cujo.
Behind the net, and then he comes in front and scores the goal. And I think that was double overtime, I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Solo job! And he's, do we have it? All right, here we got it.
It is Gilmore waiting.
I will. I remember, again, not a Leaf fan, but being in Toronto when he scored that goal.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And you go back to that and Cliff Fletcher taking over. Remember, that's obviously post-Harold Ballard, right? So you had a feeling when you went into the old garden, Cliff had done such a good job of sprucing it up, right? Put a lot of pictures up and banners and, hey, it was a dirty old building, but he did everything he could. And then on the ice, well, first of all, they brought in Pat Burns, which was a big thing. They made the Sylvain Lefebvre trade, which was small, but that was also Felix Botvan coming along, right? Where people were excited coming through the system, the Gilmore trade, the Andrews Vanderchuk trade. Just a lot of things there to try to get the energy back around the club. And that trade, of course, with Calgary ripped the heart out of that franchise and just would absolutely jump-started the Toronto Maple Leafs.
All right, so Doug Gilmore will join us after 9 o'clock. Quick update on our TSN 1200 Twitter poll. And again, we're not going to hold anything to it, but we, you know, after we're done our best 10 of the last 10, we're gonna run some or maybe all of the playoff run of 2017. It was such a magical time here in Ottawa, that 6 weeks or so that with the wins over the Bruins and the Rangers and then going seven games and double overtime with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we've thrown it out as a Twitter poll. When we replay the 2017 playoff run, what do you want to do as far as the games? You want to hear all of them? All of the games, including the losses, or you just want to hear the wins? And it started off as just the wins. And usually I find, and this goes through for any kind of polling that's done,
yeah.
And Twitter poll is usually the same way. Once you get, let's say, 100 votes or 200 votes in, percentage-wise, things don't tend to change very much. Those numbers, okay. And you do a lot of Twitter polls, right,
yeah.
Simmer? And if you track them, generally speaking, if you get 100 votes in the first 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever, or 200 votes, generally speaking, the percentages don't tend to change very much.
Yeah,
I can tell you that this one was heavily weighted early in the voting to just the wins. And as I click on it right now, we're just 50 votes in because we've been about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
53-47, just the wins.
Yeah.
53%, all the games 47%. So that's a close substantially. So keep the votes coming. If you follow us on Twitter, at TSN 1200.
Well, and I know the Raptors are replaying in the middle of, I've not watched any of it, but replaying the entire series. I would think if I take myself in, and I'll go back to being a Montreal Canadiens fan in the 70s, early 80s, if you play me a series that I know, whatever it is, five games, six games, seven games, go back to the old, even Montreal versus Quebec, if I know the Ottawa Senators, which they are, winning the first two rounds, I would probably, I don't mind hearing all the games, right? Because it's a bit of that fun of the roller coaster of the playoffs, but I know in finality that they're going to eliminate Boston and New York. The question is, how do you feel about the Pittsburgh series, which you ultimately lose and feel like, wow, you're that close to going to the Stanley Cup final against the Nashville Predators, that I think a lot of people probably felt like, should they have gotten there, they were basically a 50-50 chance to win a Stanley Cup?
There's a fun debate going on as far as televising, we'll call them classic games, that's going on right now. And I thought it was a good question. I don't remember who raised it, somebody on social media, about that if you're into watching, because there's no live sports right now, if you're into watching classic games, and this was when the guy raised it, I thought, you know what, you're right. He said, I don't really, generally speaking, want to watch games from the recent past in the last, let's say, I don't know, 2 to 5 years. I want to see games, and you know, a lot of you listening right now aren't old enough, but from the 80s and 90s, games that I've kind of forgotten a lot of the detail about. Like the games that were, even classic games that were last year, 2 years ago, I pretty much know everything, and everything is so ubiquitous right now where you can go on YouTube, watch a 5 minute highlight pack, and you know everything about the game.
Yeah.
Those don't exist, or you maybe haven't looked at them as much when we're talking about your favorite team's games in the, you know, through the 80s and 90s. And you know, I look at it myself and I think, and I have not watched a lot. I mean, there's a TSN's showing a lot of games, and you mentioned the Raptors. They're sharing it with Sportsnet, showing it game by game. I haven't tuned into any of them, to be honest with you. And I was all in last year when this was going on. But I feel like I might watch maybe the last game against the Warriors when they win the championship, maybe. But I tell you what, games from like 20 years ago, that were huge games, whatever it might be, a Super Bowl or something like that. Like I watched, Super Bowl from 20 years ago, a couple of days ago, I watched highlights of it. Would I want to watch the game? I think people might be more into watching older games than more recent games.
Yeah, no, everybody's different. I think storyline, and I'm such a bandwagon fan, I think of a few instances going back again as a kid. Would I watch any of the Montreal Canadiens Stanley Cups from the 70s? Sure. Would I watch the New Year's Eve game against the Soviet Union? Would I watch even the Miracle Game of the United States? Yes. Would I go back and watch the 2004 World Series of the Boston Red Sox and how that that all played out against the Yankees? Probably. I think even to what the Redskins and Mark Rippon's story in 92 or 93, I think we all have these different pressure points, but you're right. Any of the nostalgic hockey, if your team had won a championship, and I know you watched the Eagles beat the Patriots, that's something.
That's a recent one that was pure pleasure.
Well, and because it was the first one they've won, and there's no sarcasm to that. I'm just saying it's just different for everybody, but I agree with you. Like, the Raptors thing is way too recent. They had, what was it, Game 5, Pat Borders had a big hit against Atlanta. Like, that would draw me in. If I go back to the Expos, unfortunately, it's all kind of Rick Monday for my era. Would I want to watch some of the positive games or the series before that they won? I would for sure. Like you take me back to old. I was even watching yesterday, and I'm just thinking, you know what? We got to get Ben Johnson reinstated for that 88 Olympic gold medal. Everybody else got caught, including that darn Carl Lewis. His teeth and his head changed. But you feel differently about. You need a little time, and I love going back and just watching some of the old stuff.
I've had a lot of fun. This is what, to your point of the older games, and it also kind of takes you back to some simpler times into your youth, and that's what has attracted me to watching the Blue Jays championship series and World Series runs of 92 and 93. It's been a lot of fun to just relive that, because I don't remember the little things. I don't remember Tom Glavine completely dominating the Jays in Game 1 and thinking, geez, we got Glavine, and then they got Smoltz after that, and then they've got Avery. How the heck is this offense going to do against this starting rotation? And then you learn, oh, they got to the bullpen, and the bullpen was terrible for the Braves. So it's kind of interesting to watch the old schools.
Yeah, a lot of the March Madness games from the 80s and 90s, and some of them are just classics, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the championship game when Villanova beat Georgetown from the mid 1980s. I mean, I've got that one. I ran on the weekend last weekend,
and
I've PVR'd it, and I just haven't had time, but I definitely want to watch that. You want to talk about a team having. A Cinderella team having the perfect game. I think they shot 80% from the field at Villanova to win that game over Patrick Ewing in Georgetown. Like, those are the types of games where you just don't, you remember they won, but you don't remember a lot of details on how they win. I'd rather see games from minimum 10 to 20 to even, in some cases, 30 years ago, just because I need my memory jogged for a lot of it.
No, I agree. And it's just cool. Even, first thing you grab a hold of is the uniforms and how the players look. And I'll also go back to that Villanova win. At that time, between John Thompson and what he represented, along with Patrick Ewing, and you had an African-American team at an all-white Georgetown school, for the most part, in D.C., like you were love them or hate them, right? And that was part of the feel. That was really the build up just previous to that, with Michael Jordan to Magic to Larry Bird, like the relevance of college basketball and Patrick Ewing, you talk about being a rock star before he became the NBA. Like, that was really a big deal. And I think that's when a lot of people fell in love with March Madness in that early to mid 80s.
All right. So in addition to people voting on our web poll question of which games from the 2017 run do you want to hear, some people have commented as well, including Erica writes, I want to hear all of them except the last one. Game 7 against Pittsburgh. Yeah. So there you go. Matthew writes, feel like you have to include Eastern Conference Final Game 7. Super sad, though, but still a fun game to watch, of course, right? Ottawa down for most of the game. And then of all guys, was it Ryan Dzingel, right? Gets the game-tying goal at the lip of the crease with about 2 minutes to go. And then we all know what happened in double overtime. Dustin writes, just the wins with recaps of the other games beforehand.
Yeah.
And run them in order. And then Sed writes, how about none of them? And I thought, well, that's a bit harsh, Sed. And then I looked at the logo, his Twitter handle, his avatar.
Yeah.
It's a Boston Bruins logo. So now it all kind of made sense.
Right to you.
Yeah, Sed, exactly. Sed's dead.
Yeah.
As we saw in Pulp Fiction. We'll leave that one alone. Also for Sens fans, and I don't even know if they're in the archives, I'm assuming the very first game. I'm assuming the game that they clinched to get into the playoffs. Like, there's all pressure points for the fan base, right? That you'd be excited to hear go through the rosters, to hear it on the radio, to hear the calls. But again, that's for each fan and each fan base. And the stories to me are the nice part. Like, anytime you do the summary of what's happened for different different teams. I love the breakdown, and you talked about the 28-3 lead that Atlanta had on the Patriots or the 0-4 Red Sox. The series of events that have to happen for teams to win championships at times that are they're just on the verge. Like for the Philadelphia Eagles, to lose your starting quarterback, and I still remember, and I think it was your reaction, was Foles not just god-awful that first weekend when he took over and everyone thought, oh, the season's over? Like there's no way. Like just get this over with. For them to go on and win a Super Bowl, like that's magic.
All right, we'll take a break. Love your feedback on anything we chat about at 12-1200. Standard messaging rate supply. You can tweet at us as well at TSN 1200. Keep the wrenches coming as well at 750. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about the NFL news of the day, a little bit about the OHL draft, which is going on tomorrow, straight ahead of a visit with Pierre McGuire. Coming up after 8, you are listening to Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Tomorrow, this has always been a virtual event. Often the team with the first pick in the draft will invite the player that they're going to pick up, and they'll have a news conference the day ahead of time and trot them out in the uniform or whatever because they know they're going to pick them. And the North Bay Battalion have the first pick, and they are going to announce at 1 o'clock this afternoon who they're picking. Obviously, they're not going to have the player up there because of the world we're living in right now, but they know who they're going to pick. The Niagara Ice Dogs have the second pick in the draft. Sarnia will pick third. 67s, by virtue of the great season that they had before things were canceled, will go 20th and last. And normally when you go 20th and last, it's because you won the OHL championship. So they got everything but the championship banner, but they'll pick the final pick of the first round. They also have Hamilton second rounder, 26th overall. So they have an early second rounder. They do not have their own second round pick. This if you want to have some fun, if you go to the OHL website, and you just click on draft priority, like the selection order. You can't trade first-round picks in the OHL, but you can trade picks after that. And we all have seen the trades, right, where a player gets traded for like 19 draft picks. Go through it. I went through it last night just for fun. Like in the second round, I think there's only like two or three picks that haven't been traded. Like it's, Ottawa from Hamilton. Ottawa, the 67s, their own pick at the end of the second round, it's been traded to somebody. Yeah. But that just goes to show you, like, how many picks have been traded. But,
It is crazy. I go back to 1985, and actually for a long time, they used to hold an actual draft, just like the NHL. It was in the North York area, and I don't know what year it stopped. I think the last time was 1990, but you would go down there, you would have the draft, and that time only 15 teams. So the league has expanded, it's changed, and I was kind of looking at, because when we had on the coach, I'm drawing a blank right now, for Sudbury last week, and talked about
Corey Stillman,
talking about Corey, like really important that the Byfields of the world want a report. So I was kind of curious because Bob McKenzie was talking about it. North Bay has not been a great franchise, and they've really had a hard time. This goes all the way back to when I played the Sudburys and the Sioux of the world and the North Bays. A lot of kids wouldn't go. Adam Graves was by far the best prospect when we were drafted. He didn't want to go. All of a sudden, there's old CompuWare Windsor Spitfires pick him up, draft him. And so that and trying to create the balance. So be curious to see who they end up picking today.
There is a consensus number one overall kid out of Ontario who has already committed to going down and playing in the USHL next year. Last name is Fantilli, and he's already said, I think his brother already plays in the program there, and they are looking at, they're keeping their options open, right? Because once you play for an OHL team, you can't go play NCAA hockey, so that door is closed. So that kid in particular, who's I think the ranked to be the number one kid, has for now decided to he's going to sit in the sidelines, and maybe again this is a this is a way a lot of top ranked kids get to eventually ending up in the place they want to end up if they don't want to go to a North Bay.
It is tough. And I think he was playing down in, he was playing prep school in the United States. So yeah, that felt like a bit of shenanigans, but it has been. And that's always been the problem for the OHL. And unfortunately, and even as recent, who would have thunk back in the day, the Peterborough Petes have run into that, where you would look at Ottawa right now, one of the premier programs in junior hockey. Assumption is they don't have anybody, any problems as far as getting people to report.
15 rounds, 300. 100 players in total will be chosen, and I've told the story before of not necessarily shenanigans, but sometimes favors can be called. We get down to the final picks of the draft, the final few rounds. Sometimes it's a, I don't know, maybe a sponsor or something, or an old friend maybe just wants the pleasure of having their child drafted. Nothing guaranteed, of course, but hey, my son got drafted into the OHL of. The story of the 67s person. I'll keep the names anonymous for now, but a long time 67s star, requested in the final round of the draft. This is a few years ago now, 15th round. Hey, can you draft my girlfriend's brother?
Yeah.
You know, I put in a lot of good years for the organization, did a lot of good things. I carry the banner as a former 67 proudly. Can you do me a favor? My girlfriend's brother, can you draft him in the 15th round?
Yeah, and you're sitting around the table. No, you're right. And some of the funny conversations that come up. What typically would happen with Ottawa back in the day and other teams, the same thing. You would draft some of the Ottawa kids, and I think of a guy like Mike Griffiths, if people remember him. He was a hell of a player. 50-goal man, was, I think, slated to go to Cornell. The difficulty always for the OHL, or not for the difficulty, but for the player, is that all your buddies are getting drafted and they want to go play in the OHL. Almost everybody that wants to have a scholarship has to play that last year of Tier 2, right? So all your buddies are going on, and they know that there's that transition to the summer. If you're at an under 17 or under 18, all your buddies are talking about how great the OHL is. That's where some of those kids that should go to school, that want to go to school, you take a flyer on a pick, and they end up reporting to you.
All right, so OHL draft tomorrow, I believe, starts at 9 o'clock. Kenny Walls will be monitoring things and live tweeting all the picks, including, of course, the 67's picks, most importantly, tomorrow through our TSN 1200 Twitter page. You can follow along the entire draft as well through the Ontario Hockey League. We'll say good luck to all the kids from the Ottawa area. We'll get picked up tomorrow and maybe have a little bit more of an idea what their hockey future will hold. Quick piece of NFL news, because I did say there was a signing today, or at least a re-signing. The Kansas City Chiefs re-signed receiver Sammy Watkins, a restructured deal. He was supposed to count $14 million against the cap. They've re-signed him to a $9 million year, $9 million guaranteed with bonuses that could go up to 16. It was important that they did that, as Adam Schefter writes this morning, because the Kansas City Chiefs had $171 left in cap space before they restructured. When I saw 171, I said 171,000. Wow, that's really... No, $171 in cap space is what they had before they re-signed Sammy Watkins. There had been some talk that Sammy could be on the trade block, potentially moved out, but he will be back with the Super Bowl champions for the 2020 season. All right, we'll take a break, get you the latest news from 580 CFRA, and then when we come back, we'll talk some hockey. Pierre McGuire will join us on a Friday morning, and that is next here on TSN 1200.